from deep inside your radio.
You never know when there's going to be a transmitter problem, so you always have to check. And that's what we do here in radio. Ladies and gentlemen, I guess it's official. If you had dozed for 24 hours starting Thursday night, you would really have missed all traces of the fact that the United States Army Corps of Engineers, in a 6,000-page report, has officially taken blame, culpability, responsibility, whatever you want to call it, for the flooding of New Orleans. In just that many words, or, well, in enough words to fill 6,000 pages, actually. Catastrophic failure was the phrase used by Lieutenant General Carl Strock of the U.S. Army Corps. As I say, if you were paying attention Thursday night and Friday morning for the Thursday night newscasts and the Friday morning papers, you actually knew this. On the other hand, if you were checking up in the weekly roundups of the big stories, one of which airs on this on many of these stations, or on the Sunday morning yak shows, there was no discussion of that story at all. There was discussions of, the new Treasury Secretary, that's important. He might decide to stop making pennies. There were discussions about the arrest of 17 guys in Canada who may have been involved in a terrorist plot. There were discussions about Haditha, the alleged massacre in Iraq, where United States Marines are alleged to have killed 22 civilians, including women and children. Just by contrast, the death toll as a result of the Army Corps of Engineers' catastrophic failure, their words, is well over 1,000 American civilians. Just, you know, perspective and all. And speaking of Haditha, there was much discussion on the Sunday morning yak shows about the fact that in the wake of whatever happened at Haditha, and why can't we just, you know, be honest and pronounce it Haditha? Why do we have to do the lisp like the king of Iraq does? In the wake of whatever happened at Haditha, the military has ordered new kind of crash training or retraining or recrash retraining in core warrior values this summer for our troops in Iraq. Which, you know, I'm sure it's fine. A crash course in values is always good. Here, however, from a Canadian report on the Army Corps of Engineers, mea culpa, are a couple of things the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers did, even though they assessed themselves no taint of malfeasance. You know, they presided over a catastrophic failure, but they didn't do anything wrong, is basically the tone of the report, unlike the reports of other independent investigators who had plenty of blame. Anyway, here's a couple of things the Corps did. In some cases, the stability of the soil beneath flood walls was calculated on the basis of widely spaced samples and averages that failed to take into account weak spots. If you just average it out, it's all strong. And some flood wall heights were overestimated by as much as 3 feet because of poor measurement techniques or failure to allow for known sinking terrain. But that's not malfeasance, you see, ladies and gentlemen. Given that, I would suggest that the Army might want to expand its, or the military might want to expand its program and have some training in core values for the Corps. Hello, welcome to the show.
Wanna buy a new car, but the price ain't right. Ain't that gold? Be a downside cheaper, yes it would. Started riding the bike. Listen, they're making milk out of powder. Yeah, they are. Got the babies crying. Poor baby, they know what that stuff is. Rent's gone up higher. Yes, it is. Got the parents lying.
I'll pay you tomorrow.
Lord, it's a real mother for ya. Throw your troubles away. Dance to the music, yeah, that the DJ plays. Well, all right. And then the lights come on, yeah, like you knew they would. Is that cold? Gone home and face the music that don't sound too good. Ain't that cold? Listen, Lord, it's a real mother for ya. It'll make you wanna run for cover, yeah. And if you look, you will discover, yeah. Lord, it's a real mother for ya.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you back in the Le Show Dome, where I belong. I belong everywhere. What the hell? Who am I kidding? And nowhere. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And first on the agenda, because the global war on terror is really our top priority, ain't it? Most of us. I'm not talking about, certain people in the media, like Anderson Cooper, the thinking man's Rita Cosby, but I'm just saying the global war on terror is a major priority. So the Bush administration said this week it's planning to let Pakistan, our good friends in Pakistan, you see, buy advanced Harpoon anti-ship, I said ship, missiles and related equipment in a significant upgrade of the Asian nation's existing weapon systems. This is the country who's the father of whose A-bomb proliferated nuclear information to Iran. We're ticked at Iran. We're selling weapons to Pakistan. You tell me, Department. Of the total of the Harpoon missiles sought by Pakistan, 50 would be for launch from submarines. The war on terror goes to sea, ladies and gentlemen. 50 from surface ships and 30 by air. The equipment would provide a significant up. The notice does not mean that a sale has been concluded. In addition, Congress can interfere to prevent it. It's a proposed sale, which will contribute to the foreign policy and national security of the United States by helping to improve the security of a friendly country that continues to be a key ally in the global war on terrorism, according to the Pentagon. The upgraded targeting capability significantly reduces the risk of hitting non-combatant targets, thus improving Pakistan's naval operational flexibility. They won't hit the wrong targets at sea. Doesn't help the people in Haditha very much, does it? Well, they could all get life rafts. Life rafts in the desert, ladies and gentlemen. That's my prescription. And now, news from outside the bubble. The European Union is at metaphorical war with the United States over the handing over of personal details on all passengers on flights between Europe and the United States. The deal requiring European airlines to hand over that information was thrown out by European court judges this week. The court decision almost certainly means long lines and holdups for Europeans at American airports once the current system is scrapped. The American authorities asked for 34 pieces of information about every European passenger, including credit card details, as a security measure. The data is made available to the United States within 15 minutes of takeoff. The deal between Washington and the European Commission was opposed by many European members of Parliament, however, as a breach of privacy laws. They got privacy laws in Europe? How quaint. Now the European Court of Justice has backed the members of Parliament and scrapped the passenger name records, PNR, system. The system has to be annulled not on the issue of privacy, but on purely technical legal grounds that existing European data protection law only covers commercial data and was not wide enough in scope to cover data used for security purposes. The executive director of the British Air Transport Association, which represents airlines, says the court ruling leaves airlines caught between a rock and a hard place, facing the possible loss of the right to land on U.S. soil. The late Dr. Zaki Badawi, the head of the Muslim College of Britain, was held in a New York airport for 6 hours and then denied entry because U.S. Immigration said it had information indicating he was inadmissible. He'd been due to give a lecture in New York. The court ruling was not based on such cases, but on a legal technicality. But wait, there's more. News from outside the bubble. Right here. A week after the British government launched, for those who wonder about what the primary culture is in Britain these days, there are, maybe it's just frenzy, media frenzy, but there are reports this week in major British newspapers indicating that it's, quote, knife culture. This is from The Guardian in London. A week after the British government launched its first knife amnesty in more than 10 years, already resulting in hundreds of weapons being turned over, Britain appears to be seized by an epidemic of knife crime. At least 15 serious stabbings in the past week have seen a teenage sales assistant in a North London store stabbed 7 times after confronting shoplifters. A 40-year-old woman stabbed to death and blah, 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 blah. All right, so anyway, don't need to hear the details of all these things. In South, the Home Secretary, John Reed, that's like our Home Secretary, proposed a violent crime reduction bill which would raise the age at which one can legally buy a knife from 16 to 18. Campaigners also argue the maximum sentence for those caught carrying a knife should also be raised from 2 to 5 years. But this newspaper found in South London, these attempts were met with scorn by a group of young people for whom the weapons are far from unfamiliar. They're not themselves involved in crime, but as they described as the lives that they and their friends lead, it's clear that for some communities in Britain's cities, deadly weapons are an almost casual normality. One says he is scared by the omnipresence of knives and other lethal weapons where he lives. I do get scared, he says. I get stopped all the time by little youths just thinking they're big on the street because they're in a group. Most young people these days do carry knives, or say they do, if they're going out to make trouble. Another says he has seen 8- and 9-year-olds carrying knives. Knife culture, ladies and gentlemen, in Great Britain. You know what I say? Send them guns. Grow up. Carry guns. The Haditha situation alluded to at the top of today's broadcast brought this from the new prime minister of Iraq, Prime Minister Nouri Kamal al-Maliki. He lashed out at the American military on Thursday, denouncing what he characterized as habitual attacks by troops against Iraqi civilians. The country's leaders also said they would demand American officials turn over their investigative files on Haditha. The Iraqi government would conduct its own inquiry. That's going to be good. In his comments, Prime Minister Maliki said violence against civilians had become a, quote, daily phenomenon by many troops in the American-led coalition who, quote, do not respect the Iraqi people. Continuing to quote him, they crush them with their vehicles and kill them just on suspicion, he said. This is completely unacceptable. Attacks on civilians will play a role in future decisions on how long to ask American forces to remain in Iraq. Was he unusual for a government that depends deeply dependent on American forces to keep some form of order? Also a sign of the growing pressure on Maliki, whose coalition includes Sunni Arabs who are enraged. That's odd for Iraqis to be enraged. Enraged by news of the killings in Haditha. Not saying they shouldn't be. I'm just saying, you know. But maybe he didn't say that. On Friday, White House Press Secretary Tony Snow said Maliki had told U.S. Ambassador Zalmay Khalilzad that he had been misquoted. But Snow was unable to explain what Maliki told Khalilzad he had actually said or how he had been misquoted. And at another news conference on Friday, Maliki said, this case happened as a mistake and a violation. There should be a correction for this fault and the violation. We correct the fault and keep the basic agreements under which the forces are here. At the same press conference, U.S. Ambassador Zalmay Khalilzad said, quote, we will let the world know what the investigation reveals. So somebody put something on somebody's windpipe there, sounds like. But now news of the new Iraq. This from another British newspaper, The Telegraph, a conservative newspaper, reporting on Iraq's creeping Talibanization. Militants visited falafel vendors. Attention, Bill O'Reilly. Falafel vendors a fortnight ago, that's 2 weeks ago, telling them to pack up their stalls by this week or be killed. Falafel apparently is going the same way as alcohol, pop music, and foreign films labeled theologically impure by the country's growing number of Islamic zealots. The close your stalls or be killed ultimatum seemed so odd that at first most laughed it off until two of them were shot dead as they sold their falafel. I said I was just feeding the people, said one, But they said there were no falafels in Muhammad the Prophet's time, so we shouldn't have them either. He said, continuing, I felt like telling them there were no Kalashnikovs in Muhammad's time either, but I wanted to keep my life. Falafel vendors are blacklisted while their colleagues are allowed to continue selling kebabs or Western-style pizzas and burgers. This remains a mystery. Some suspect it's because a taste for falafels is one of the few things that unites Jewish and Arab communities in Israel. It is, however, just one of many Islamic edicts to hit Baghdad in recent weeks, prohibiting everything from the growing of goatees to the sale of mayonnaise, because it is allegedly made in Israel. Even the Arab addiction to cigarettes is being challenged, with insurgents declaring smoking bans in at least one Sunni district of Baghdad. We already reported last week on the coach and two players of Iraq's tennis team being shot for wearing shorts. Another group of traders to feel the new Talibanists' unexpected wrath is Baghdad's ice merchants, who sell large chunks of ice for storing food and chilling drinks. City of constant power cuts and sizzling temperatures, the service they provide is little short of essential. But they, too, have fallen afoul of the claim that their product was not a feature of life during Muhammad's time. One, a 19-year-old ice seller, thought the threats were too ludicrous to be true until it was too late. He laughed. He thought it was impossible they would kill him. They came back 2 days later and shot him dead, along with three other ice sellers nearby. Barbers have been inundated with young men anxious to shave off their goatees. Last month, a 17-year-old was allegedly killed for wearing one, which Islamists deem a Jewish style of facial hair, ladies and gentlemen. Goatee, the goatee, a Jewish style of facial hair. The new Iraq. And there's more, because where's that good news? This hardline religious crackdown, says the Times of London, involves men in black, a Taliban-style militia waging war against the urban middle class, organized, according to the Times of London, owned by Rupert Murdoch, by Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq. New rules, among the new rules proclaimed by an emir, women cannot drive. Women cannot go out after midday. Women and men are not allowed to go out and walk together. They must walk separately. The rules are enforced by gentlemen who drive around in cars and others in Sunni areas that Zarqawi has declared are his. Says one resident, if they see someone breaking the rules, they shoot them. The men in black have turned women into virtual prisoners in their homes. Quote, at first we were more afraid of bombs, but now we're more afraid of getting killed for what we are wearing, says one. I used to wear jeans or short skirts. We didn't have to worry. They're not even allowed to display underwear in shops anymore. The atmosphere is becoming ever more oppressive. Men came to one woman's house and told her she could not drive anymore. Her father has to drive her to the lectures at the same university where she drove to class as an undergraduate. Last month, two teenage girls were dragged off the street in the Amaria district. When they emerged several hours later, their heads had been shaved, their violation not wearing a hijab. Not a hijab, a hijab headscarf. Militants issued a warning that in future, women walking down the street without a hijab faced death. This is going on in the most affluent Sunni neighborhoods. Women have no legal recourse. The police do nothing, even if something happens in front of their eyes, says a woman politician who did not want her name used because she and her family have been targeted. She has survived an assassination attempt, but two relatives were murdered because of her job. A female prominent engineer refused threats to stop working because she wanted to help rebuild her country. A fundamentalist gang broke into her home and shot her, said the politician. The police don't investigate because they're afraid. The Americans are too scared of roadside bombs, so when they go out, they accomplish their mission and return directly to base. They don't see anything. Iraqi women are now dependent on the men in their family. One young Iraqi woman who writes a blog described her humiliation when she tried to return to her job as a computer network administrator. Quote, "My former manager said females weren't welcome and told me in not so many words to go home. Now to go out, she must take two preferably large male relatives. She makes up reasons why she must go shopping. And always the question comes back," she says, "but do you have to go out and buy it? Can't I get it for you?" "No, you can't," I reply, "because the kilo of eggplants I absolutely have to select with my own hands is just an excuse to see the light of day and walk down a street. It feels," she adds, "like we've gone back 50 years. The new Iraq, ladies and gentlemen. And this, as an indicator of how actors continue to find work despite everything. Also from the British newspaper, The Telegraph. I haven't seen reports on this in the American press anywhere. The smell of freshly baked bread, coffee on the stove, and a few props depicting a desirable lifestyle have become the stock and trade of the ambitious home seller. Now it seems that may not be enough. Anxious that even the most gushing of descriptions may not market a home hard enough, one property company has begun a trend it thinks could catch on everywhere, hiring teams of actors to play happy families in its show homes. Attractive film and stage actors are cast in the roles of cheerful-looking parents and their angelic children, recreating scenes of domestic bliss that they hope will impress prospective buyers. The home life shows have been launched in California. Model homes are wonderful and give you an idea about the potential a house has, but what's really missing is the soul. How nice of him to use that word. Jim Garfield of Rodin Paolucci Rodin, the public relations firm behind the concept. Quote, "It's a theatrical, interactive, experiential show that allows visitors to see a home's heart." I'm sorry. I'm just tearing up a little bit. The approach is being pioneered by Centex Homes in the development in Santa Clarita, just north of L.A. Centex recruited Jason with two A's, interestingly enough. He's got to be good. Simmons, best known for his 3-year stint as a lifeguard on Baywatch, to play the father of the fictitious family, Camille Chen, a television and film actress's mother, while two children from a local theater company are the couple's offspring. While the family cooks, eats, chats, plays games, and watches television, a stream of house hunters passes through. The viewers are encouraged to treat the occupants as real people and quiz them on the items such as the oven or refrigerator, for which the actors are given fact sheets to study up on beforehand. Normally, the guests will find themselves gate-crashing a family occasion, such as the baking of a birthday cake. "We do it," says Garfield, Jason with two A's, "as a free-flowing improvisation. Set the parameters and make it like a play with specific acts." I say get there for Act 3. You know, the last thing you want to do when you're house hunting is not know how the baking of the cake comes out. Americans, says this smug British newspaper, appear to have taken the ploy entirely at face value. According to one, a 62-year-old who lives in Santa Clarita, it felt neither stage managed or artificial. "When we came in," she says, "the family was preparing for the surprise, and the kids were so excited. They offered us cookies, and some of the viewers chatted to them. It felt very real and made you want to own a house just like that. I'm encouraging my son and daughter-in-law to buy one." Unquote. A second show day at the development, which features 3 to 5 bedroom homes from $500,000 to $610,000, to live in Santa Clarita, ladies and gentlemen, in case you've been there. $500,000 to live in Santa Clarita and to be convinced to do that by a fake family. It's a wonderful world. So a second show day was planned for yesterday. The cast is the same except for Chen, who has a previous engagement, and will be changed out for a new mom. Garfield agreed that the reality genre of television shows such as Big Brother might have been a partial inspiration. Quote, "It's become so much part of our everyday lives, fantasy bleeding into reality, so I'm sure it played some kind of role. Our aim was more how to portray our clients' message in the most authentic way possible," says a property service representative in Britain, sniffing at the notion. "Most people get rid of their kids when they're showing people around their house, not put them on display. And would you have different types of actors for different homes? If you were selling an upper-middle-class home, would you have an old codger and jodhpurs wandering around the house? She concludes, this is a typically American wonderful idea, which would never work here, unquote. Give it 3 years, babe.
You got a smile that hides a thousand punchlines. You got a nose that Cyrano would die for. You go to Patsy's and you skip the lunch lines. The kind of guy that maitre d's would lie for. You found the treasure, but I got the key. So how come you ain't got me? You buy one ticket and you win the lotto. You set the tone for what the swells are wearing. You down martinis, other folks get blotto. Take up piano when you swing like shearing. You get a lot and so exquisitely. So how come you ain't got me? You get close but no cigar. You might say you drop the ball. For all of the wonderful things that you are, don't you got to have me to really have it all? Then threw a slider that left mantle looking. And won a bake-off on the cooking channel. Where Graham Kerr and Julia Childs were cooking. Since you were bouncing on your mama's knee. You have accomplished things assiduously. You'd get an A where Einstein got a B. So how come you ain't got me? Come you ain't got a me. How come you ain't got me?
This is Le Show, and now a new copyrighted feature, News of the Warm.
Soft, listen to the warm.
From Technology News Daily, human-induced climate change rather than naturally occurring ocean cycles may be responsible for the recent increases in the frequency and strength of North Atlantic hurricanes, according to researchers at MIT and Penn State. Anthropogenic, that means man-caused factors, are likely responsible for long-term trends in tropical Atlantic warmth and tropical cyclone activity, the researchers report. From data going back to the 19th century, scientists have found a correlation between the temperature of the sea surface in the tropical Atlantic and tropical cyclone activity. What's causing the increased surface temperatures? Some scientists believe human-induced climate change is behind the trend. Others cite a natural cause, an ocean cycle, similar to but weaker and less frequent than La Niña-El Niño cycle. Carrie Emanuel of MIT and Michael Mann, not the movie maker, associate professor of meteorology and geosciences at Penn State, used a statistical method to separate the influences of one from the other. The important result of this work is that the tropical North Atlantic sea surface temperature appears to be controlled largely by radiative forcing, which has changed over the past century mainly owing to sulfite aerosol pollution and greenhouse gas increases, Dr. Emanuel said. He added, there is no evidence of any, quote, natural cycle in tropical North Atlantic sea surface temperatures in late summer and early fall, he said. Listen to more warm. Something is muscling out species that live with mussels in the past 40 years. Biodiversity in mussel beds along California's coast has crashed by an average of nearly 60%. Mussel beds are among the world's most diverse temperate microhabitats, providing food and shelter for up to 300 invertebrate species at any given location. Jason Smith of Cal State Fullerton. Hey, Cal State Fullerton. You'll get your chair back. And his team sampled 22 sites that have been studied in the 60s and 70s using identical sampling methods and plot sizes. They found 24 to 81% fewer species in the beds. Over the same time, there's been a regional shift in climate leading to higher sea surface temperatures. This is increased stratification of the water, decreasing ocean biodiversity. Models have predicted the climate change would reduce biodiversity, but why would you listen to models? Oh, I see, computer models. He says, but this is one of the few empirical examples linking disappearance of species to regional climate change. I thought that was a question they asked on America's Next Model. What causes the reduction in biodiversity?
Climate change.
Global climate change may soon make our planet much itchier, says National Geographic News. Rising levels of carbon dioxide, so-called greenhouse gas, fuels booming growth in poison ivy, according to a new study. Even worse, the rash-inducing vines may become more potent. Working in a Duke University-owned forest near Chapel Hill, North Carolina, researchers used a system of carbon dioxide pipes to create atmospheric levels that were 200 parts per million higher than the current norm. Many global warming models predict that such levels will be a reality by 2050. Poison ivy growth surged some 150% in the CO2-rich forest plots. So the plots actually do thicken. And finally, the first detailed analysis of an extraordinary climatic and biological record from the seabed near the North Pole shows that 55 million years ago, the Arctic Ocean was much warmer than scientists imagined, a Floridian year-round average of 74 degrees Fahrenheit. This is from the New York Times. But they're quoting from papers published in the journal Science. Sorry, the journal Nature. Now, this would, what would you think it would make you think? Says one lead author, something extra happens when you push the world into a warmer world, and we just don't understand what that is. Suggesting maybe truth to the tipping point hypothesis. The hypothesis that says there is a point where even the cheapest customer... No, it's not about that. And, of course, speaking of news of the warm, can't ignore the premiere this weekend of the movie starring Al Gore. You know about this. An Inconvenient Truth opened this weekend at selected theaters. Last time I checked, it was number 9 in the weekend box office, which isn't bad for a talkie. And it spurred, as you know, an awful lot of talk in the liberal blogosphere about Al Gore's possible return to the political wars. But with the at least immediate, if not long-term, success this weekend of the film, An Inconvenient Truth, you tell me that this conversation isn't taking place.
Mr. Vice President.
I know, I'm being terribly formal. Al, I'm Shelley Grutton.
Hey, Shelley, we've talked on the phone, haven't we?
Yeah, sure. I'm sure we have. Mm-hmm. Come, sit, be. Oh,
thank you.
Chandra, mm-hmm. If anyone calls, I'm far, far away.
Yes, sir. Unless it's Les Moonves.
So, I guess the grosses didn't suck?
No, Al. They didn't suck. See, this right here, this is the funny Al Gore that I guess America is starting to love.
Oh, look, this is just the Al Gore underneath all that media spin. I've always had a pretty wicked sense of humor, self-deprecating and all, but... Mm-hmm. So, we going wide for the second week?
That's a good question. Not wide.
Meaning?
3 more theaters. Mm. But look, that film's launched. It's on its flight path. We'll continue to monitor its metrics. But what I wanted to talk about to you today
is where does Al Gore's movie career go next? Shelley, I don't have a movie career. I have a media career. Have you seen current TV?
You know, I haven't been able to catch it. I thought we had everything at the house. I got the dish, I got cable, but can I offer you some water?
Oh, sure. Water can't hurt you. What do you got?
Well, for visitors, we've got Dasani, but for you, we got Fiji.
Yeah, I think Fiji's still okay.
There you go.
Oh. No, I know we've had some carriage problems with current TV, but we just got picked up by Menominee Cable.
Nominee? I didn't even know you were running.
Me nominee, the Indian tribe.
Ah.
You'd be amazed, you know, since the casino opened, the number of tribe members with big plasma screens and premium cable. Next movie, huh?
Be great to announce something while the warming thing still has some heat.
Yeah, sure, I hear you. Well, gee, other causes? I mean, I don't have any other PowerPoint presentations that I've been going out with.
You know, in a way, I think that's a positive. In a big way. It gives us the opportunity to start clean, fresh, tabula rasa. You know, I mean, obviously, we're building on what we know about you. You're smart, you're funny, you care, all that good stuff.
Thank you. You know, I didn't watch it. One thing Tipper has taught me is never to watch myself on TV. But people have said to me that I was a lot funnier on Saturday Night Live than most non-pros.
You know, I've heard that too.
You didn't say it?
Tell you the truth, TiVo was on the blink. My wife started watching Anderson Cooper a couple of weeks ago, and ever since then, for some reason, the TiVo's been recording a lot of old musicals. Anyway, yeah, you're funny. But you're not dumb funny. You're not Farrelly Brothers funny. You're Geico insurance commercial funny.
I guess.
Look, here's a treatment for something our development guru, Calder Caldicott, thought might be a very good arena for you.
Calder Caldicott? I think I've met him.
Yeah, I think you did too at the thing.
The Inconvenient Astronaut.
It builds on the whole Inconvenient franchise, but it takes you to a much sexier platform, i.e. outer space.
Outer space is sexy?
It's sexy-ish.
Think Vince Vaughn is a young hotshot at NASA, raring to make the first flight to Mars, but he's been aced out of the assignment by Al Glink.
Yeah, that's you. The name can be changed.
An aging but still handsome astronaut who's determined to make this his final flight.
Yeah, see, so far, before the stunts, it could be a comedy, but it could be a drama.
Yeah.
But for you, we're thinking comedy. Or drama.
When Al recruits a sexy CIA agent, thinks Sandra Bullock, to kidnap Vince, all hell breaks loose, literally. What does that mean?
It means about $80 million in special effects. You know, funny special effects, but always smart funny.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. Kind of makes me the bad guy, doesn't it?
Well, in a comedy, the bad guy is funny. I mean, the only Adam Sandler movies, The Tank, are the ones where he plays a nice guy. But, outer space may seem a little bit out there as a concept.
A little out of this world, you might say.
Yeah. That was you being funny, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay, good. Caught it. Yeah. Look, here's a very different take. Very underplayed. We'd partner up with Pixar or somebody.
An Inconvenient Hound. There's that inconvenient again.
Al. It's your honey, something the kids.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, I know I don't have to tell you. You don't walk away from your brand.
No, I guess not.
No.
Alvin is an animated dog with a face not even his mother could love, but an outsized imagination. He's the mutt that sees all his purebred friends in the neighborhood getting first-class treatment while he's fed on table scraps, but in his dreams, he's the most pampered pooch in the world.
And it's his adventures, you know, as the Queen of England's dog or Bill Gates's dog or Jay-Z's dog or whatever. I mean, you know, you can see how wide open the concept is. Very smart, very funny kind of episodic adventure type pieces. And in between, we keep coming back to his real life and his real friends. And, of course, it's just the coolest animation you've ever seen, you know, about $80 million just for the animation.
Uh-huh. Now, I like him not being purebred.
Well, see, I told the development people, think like Al. I mean, I don't want to get all hubristic here, but...
Not sure that animation is the way I should go.
Uh-huh,
I mean, you know, should I be running for anything, which I'm not,
yeah.
But, you know, just if I were, I think my people would kind of want me to have my face in anything that might be playing in theaters around that time, you know.
Yeah.
Anybody could be doing my voice.
I suppose. It's like those internet chats with celebrities, and then their interns are the ones actually chatting with you.
That's right. So...
Well, this was something that I said you might just love, but I called it and want to show it to you.
An inconvenient day off.
Basically, cut to the chase, it's a remake of Ferris Bueller with you in the Ben Stein role.
Oh, well, my daughters loved Ferris Bueller.
Well, see, I knew there was going to be a connection there.
And I know it's kind of having fun with my sort of professorial way of talking when I'm talking.
Think a younger Topher Grace is the kid. Think you. Mm-hmm. Think $80 million just for the effects.
What effects? It's Ferris Bueller's day off.
Oh, in the remake, there are effects. Trust me. When he borrows his father's Maserati.
Well, it was a Ferrari.
But we already have a deal in place with Maserati. Right. Anyway, at one point, he's distracted by a video he's watching in his pod, and he drives straight into the Museum of Priceless Objects.
He's watching an iPod while he's driving? That's kind of a bad example.
A, it's a comedy. And B, we already have that deal in place, too.
Well, you know, Shelley, you've given me a lot to think about.
And a Fiji water.
And a Fiji water. Thanks. Thanks for all of it. Really good to finally meet you.
Yeah, you too.
Anything I can do for the next weekend's openings? You...
Yeah, we're fine. We've got good you.
Okay. Let me do a little thinking about all of this.
Oh, of course. You're the thinking man's thinking man. Call me. Chandra, when Al calls me, put the call straight through.
Yes, sir.
Take care, Al. And, the very good news?
Yeah.
There's an ethanol station right on the lot.
Cool.
Cat sleeping in the sun, eyes take heed, the colors call, sunlight patterns touch the wall, red kerchiefs sail and fall, cat is sleeping in the sun. Dragon kite in the sky, wheel and turn, spin and fly, attacked by rooks who never fail, to cry the sound of fairy tale, the cat is walking in the sun. All the pebbles I have seen, precious stones for Colleen, every minute I pass through, it'd be groovy spent with you, the cat is yawning in the sun. Jeweled castles I have built, with freak feelings of guilt, and the word stabbed to the hilt, pick the flower and it will wilt, cat shifting in the sun. The marionette dangles dead, insensitivity is fed by the TV wizard's wand. Whilst in the spell you're con, the cat smiling in the sun. Cat smiling in the sun, eyes take heed, the colors call, sunlight patterns touch the wall, red kerchiefs sail and fall, cat smiling into me.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Some good ones this week. In answer to the question, can I read? Yes, I'll read them. A Norwich Conservative Party leader was denounced by both his own party and the Samaritans organization for saying that people might be, quote, cheered up if British Prime Minister Tony Blair committed suicide. Comment by Norwich South Conservative Chairman Trevor Ivory was described as beyond the pale by the Samaritans who offer support to suicidal people. And national spokesman for the party emphasized, quote, these are clearly not the views of the Conservative Party. Ivory removed the comment from his website and stressed that he had not intended to cause any offense. Quote, if I have caused offense, I apologize for that and hold my hands up. This was a lighthearted, he explained, reference to the scene in the TV series Blackadder Goes Forth, intended to highlight the terminal decline in the public's trust and confidence in Blair. He explained, I'm sure it will be taken in the spirit in which it is intended. Amateur is doing comedy, ladies and gentlemen. And State Controller of New York, Alan Hevesy, publicly apologized this week for a beyond dumb remark, his words, about a fellow Democrat putting a, quote, bullet between the president's eyes. He called a mea culpa press conference hours after putting his foot in his mouth at the Queen's College commencement, unlike the host of your program, who didn't put his foot in his mouth at the commencement at Goucher College. Quote, I apologize to the President of the United States and to the fellow state politician, Senator Charles Schumer, Hevesy said. I am not a person of violence. I am as apologizing as abjectly as I can. There is no excuse for it. It was beyond dumb. At a news conference, Hevesy repeated what he'd recalled saying in the speech. He said he was merely trying to convey that Schumer, Democratic senator from New York, has the strength and courage to stand up to the president on major policy issues. According to a videotape of the speech, Hevesy said, quote, the man who, how do I phrase this diplomatically, who will put a bullet between the president's eyes if he could get away with it. The toughest senator, a great, great member of the Congress of the United States. Hevesy said he hadn't been in touch with the White House, but hoped his apology reached President Bush right between the ears. He didn't say that. The superintendent of the Baldwin-Whitehall School District in the greater Pittsburgh area apologized this week for the Baldwin High School students who drove onto the Brashear High School campus last week waving Confederate flags. Says Superintendent Donna K. Milanovich, we are just very sorry that it happened. We have a really very good student body, and I think the students involved in this have learned a very valuable life lesson. Several carloads of students from Baldwin drove onto the Brashear campus May 25th, led by a pickup truck. The truck's occupants waving Confederate flags. The incident occurred on Baldwin's class day, where they show how much, what class they have? No, I don't think that's the idea. Now, apologies in the media. Legendary WABC New York afternoon host Dan Ingram, host of the Flingram, dropped the F-bomb on the air this week as he spoke about unsuccessfully suing a Florida DJ who stole his name. Alan Sniffen was interviewing Ingram. Ingram was discussing how a, quote, effing court wouldn't let him appeal. WABC host Mark Simone tried to bleep him, but Ingram had been bleeped seconds earlier for an S-bomb, and WABC's digital delay system didn't have time to rebuffer. Ingram, 71, told the New York Post, in 40 years I've never said that word before on the air. I was quoting myself when I was yelling at the guy who stole my name and realized, you really got into it, dummy. He continued, it was a true slip of the tongue, and I apologize to anyone offended. I'd kick myself in the A if I could, if I can say that word, but he can't. Dan Ingram, ladies and gentlemen. Barry Bonds broke Babe Ruth's career home run record last week, but Bay Area baseball fans listening to KNBR, the official station of his team, didn't hear the call because the microphone of play-by-play announcer Dave Fleming cut out of that moment. Fans heard Fleming say, 3-2, Finley runs, the payoff pitch, a swing and a drive to deep set. We apologize to the listeners on the radio, Giants Executive Vice President Larry Bear said. We're as surprised as any of the fans listening. We have no idea what happened. I'm disappointed, Fleming said. I made the call, it just didn't go out over the air. Channel 9 in Australia was embarrassed When it was revealed on live TV that a camera shot had been set up to make a situation in East Timor look more perilous than it was, under questioning from the Today Show's Jessica Rowe as to why the Army was not doing enough to defend the, to end the violence, Brigadier Michael Slater said that a Channel 9 producer had positioned armed soldiers behind him to make it appear hazardous. Jessica, I feel quite safe here, but not because I've got these armed soldiers behind me that were put there by a stage manager here to make it look good, he said. I don't need these guys here. A flustered Rowe quickly apologized. Brigadier, I didn't realize that these soldiers were placed there specifically for the shot. I apologize. And BBC Breakfast presenter Kate Silverton apologized this week for wearing an outfit which put viewers off their cornflakes. She appeared on the morning program Sofa in a green and yellow psychedelic blouse with matching scarf. Viewers contacted the BBC switchboard to complain. The presenter said, "My blouse has divided opinion. I apologize if it has made you turn down the contrast on your set. It has divided opinion, and I do apologize to those of you who hate it." A BBC spokeswoman said, quote, "It is usual to get feedback from viewers on whether or not they like what a presenter is wearing." The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. That's going to put the psychedelic cap on the bottle of this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time and over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via WBCQ, the planet shortwave. Around the world via the internet at two locations, whenever you want it, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available channel 136 at Sirius Satellite Radio, available as a free download at audible.com/LeShow, available on Mighty 104 in Berlin, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like getting snarky remarks from you on my on-air attire, if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack, a tip of the Le Show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. Oh, I already said that part. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world, think of it, as the home of the homeless. How many Anderson Cooper jokes will be on next week's show? Tune in and find out.